All right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast NBA Podcast. My name is Keith. I'm here, as always, with my buddies Chuck and John.
What up?
What a day. That was a pregnant pause for the season is over. The regular season is over. We made it through the regular season.
Almost didn't. We went to Memphis twice. We could have died.
Could have died easily. How many days of your life do you wake up the next day with, like, you know what? Could have died.
Me?
Yeah, no, you, John, and Chuck personally. John, go first.
I'm going to go with two days per week.
Yeah, I'm like 2 days per week that I don't wake up feeling like that.
So okay.
Like, I'm like a solid 5 days a week. Like, wow, I probably could have lost good.
You're
my
like,
life.
You're like, I really shouldn't have done that. It turns out.
I wake up and basically Ron Burgundy's like in my head going, that was reckless. That escalated quickly.
Exactly. That's perfect. No, the end of the regular season, I get bittersweet. I get sad. Right. No more Bucks games. No more Suns games. No more Sixers games.
Nuggets?
No more Nuggets. I watched so many Nuggets games.
I love the Nuggets. Nikola Jokic is my spirit animal.
Oh, I adore the Jokic. Barton, all this Barton talk's getting me down. We might get to him later. He might show up in the awards segment.
Six-man award.
Where we actually run through the regular. There's a tease for us doing something by the book. Something to look forward to.
Aren't we going to do all second best?
Yeah, yeah.
And not even reveal who our favorite actual pick is?
Also, the end of the regular season is like the returning to some of family life for me. No longer is every evening I have the excuse of there are so many games on. I'm just going to sit down in the baby dungeon, as John has named it.
Yeah, you have no more basketball necessary things to watch.
What are you going to do?
This is when he reads books, right?
Hey, as the quest for enlightenment was tickled by that, the Hinkie letter made me want gave me a thirst for knowledge. I started reading that Jonathan Abrams book. Ooh, it grabbed me. It was good.
Pretty good.
A little aside, I started reading that Jonathan Abrams book because the main breaker of my house flipped off and would not go back on, so I was out of power.
Yeah, I feel like you're just going to now play basketball video games.
I'm actually been really into this FIFA 12 career. I've been doing a FIFA 12. It's
now this is when
it's pretty good.
Is Ronaldinho still good in FIFA 12?
Keith at the
I'll
end.
I'll just say you can make Jose Altidore awesome.
Keith gets into last year. Remember, he got into that weird the tournament thing.
I'm so excited you mentioned this, Chuck. Today I saw my first tournament tweet of some I don't know, like Lehigh somebody. It was like
a former leading scorer.
Yeah. No. It was like all these guys who played at Lehigh or something were like, retweet if you want to see whoever in the tournament. And it got to me thinking, man, we have to throw our weight, what little weight we have.
Let's get together.
We need to throw our tiny social media weight behind one of these squads.
Let's get together like Wally Zerbiak, Kevin Pitsnoggle, and Greg Ostertag.
If there's a Kevin Pitsnoggle, Mike Gansey tournament team, that will be our
Rex
team.
Chapman.
Unless Marquise Daniels is organizing one.
We're on that one.
That will be great. You know, I do. I get set like the first round of the NBA playoffs normally excites me because it's all the fun matchups. I feel like this year maybe we'll be surprised, but it seems like it's going to be a big letdown the first round of the playoffs.
I think there's some pretty compelling ones.
Well, there are, and again, we'll get to those, but I think I'm focusing my view on the summer. I've started tabulating my free agency people, started dreaming about what can be.
We going to Vegas?
I am going to Vegas.
We will die in Vegas. I can't promise. I have a lot of money.
Here's the thing. I'm not actually going to let you guys know when I'm there.
Oh, that's probably smart.
If you happen to be there too, that's fine.
Okay.
Keith, here's the thing you don't realize about Chuck and I. We can find you.
No.
No, I'm not. Again, not going to hide
anywhere.
My itinerary anywhere.
Right. We have to do is look.
But I'm also not like, we're not splitting a room.
Chuck's got like the internet savvy, and then I got the street.
Oh yeah.
Pockets full of watches, and I'll stick them under your car wheel.
And we'll know from when you
the
leave.
Couple, like Jake Giddies.
From the couple years I've started getting to know you guys.
Right.
Also, part of this is I haven't always noticed a lot of foresight in y'all's plans.
No.
So I feel like there's a good chance that the Vegas thing will sneak up on you, and you guys will be like, "Oh, this is the week Keith's in Vegas, but I can't do it."
Oh, so see, that's very sneaky.
See, you got it all wrong. There's not much foresight. because we can just do whatever we want to.
Yeah,
do
we don't have a wife and drop a child like you do.
Drop of a hat.
Yeah.
That's perfect. All right, so.
I only have one rule for Vegas. No one can say Vegas, baby, Vegas.
Or what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Oh, that, yeah. I don't
say those things.
I don't know who you're running with. That would, yeah, that's not.
Bill Simmons.
That's exactly. All right.
Turtle from Entourage.
Let's back up a little and let's get to our breakfasts before we get into a very meaty episode, a very exciting end of regular season, looking forward to the playoffs. What did you guys have for breakfast?
I had 3 chili cheese pups and 2 cheese crystals. Although, actually, I gave one of the chili cheese pups to Chuck.
It was pretty good.
Crystal's breakfast, huh?
It was more like a lunch, but it was my first meal, so.
The great part was I was pulling up next to John when we came to podcast, and he was shame eating in the car. And yeah, then he looked at me and was like.
He had like his arm was up, yeah. Like covering his face.
He was like, shh.
Yeah. I was wearing one of those Michael Jackson masks that he used to wear when he was trying to avoid the paparazzi that actually make you more conspicuous.
Yeah, and then he got out of the car and immediately went to get a window tint appointment. He doesn't want to have anybody.
This can't happen again.
No.
There is some I have to be careful with my fast food intake, though. Like, I have to throw it away in my neighbor's trash can.
Yeah. Because
if my old lady sees it, I'm going to get a lecture about that involves Lipitor.
Oh, yeah. You are welcome to throw it away in my trash can. But just could it be the outside trash can?
Nothing.
I did.
A lot of times, John will put trash in trash cans I don't really empty ever. Like down in the basement, he's, like, throwing food away in there.
You know how cats mark their territory?
Yeah.
I like to put my beer cans in bathroom trash cans. And I see if they're still there the next time I go there. And I go, that's right, this is my house. Like, I have friends whose wives, like, truly can't stand it.
That's amazing.
Delaney Gray?
You have friends whose wives can't stand you. This is shocking.
I know,
John.
Right?
This is shocking.
I'm the wife killer.
Yeah.
I'm the widow maker.
Chuck, what'd you have for breakfast?
I had a ultimate meat and cheese burrito from Sonic. Old standard.
Nice.
I was
Thank
in a
you,
rush.
Chuck.
Was it in your...
Slow clap.
Was it in your... You have a Sonic.
I have a Sonic by my house.
Was it your Sonic or
no? This was the Sonic. I ended up crashing on someone's couch last night.
And yeah, I hung out Chuck last night. There was no way he was going back to Murfreesboro.
No, so
0% chance.
Woke up early a.m. Thought I'm not going to fight this traffic. I'm sitting and get me a burrito, and I got me the ultimate meat and cheese with my life hack, which is extra tots.
Yes,
and doubles your volume by like 50%.
You're a portions man.
I believe in value and bang for your buck. So if you're going to pay, they're going to give you free tots. I'm going to put them in there, fam.
Yeah.
I used to have a bass player, and it could be the most delectable, like, Wolfgang Puck served meal ever. That portion was wrong. He was going to Yelp.
Oh.
And he was going, terrible portion size.
Man.
Horrible.
I don't like Yelp.
Portion size. That's funny.
I don't like Yelp.
It could be at
Yelp.
Nobu.
That's just corporate snitching. That's all that is. I'm from the streets, baby. We don't do that.
Yelp's an issue.
It is. My favorite.
It can't be trusted.
My favorite restaurants are the ones that have no Yelpers on the door when you walk in.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it's the best.
You can't have.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Don't register for it. It's nonsense.
Oh, you have to register for that?
Yeah.
I like looking at large national chains Yelps.
Yeah.
Like your experience at. Whatever.
Chipotle.
The Antioch McDonald's is indicative of a McDonald's.
Right.
You're like, these guys really don't care here. Like, well, yes, sir. That's correct.
That's correct.
But that's fine.
Look at our Zagat rating.
The Michelin stars.
That's perfect. I had a leftover. I used some leftover hot wings. And I know we've said before, chicken and egg, not supposed to do it.
No.
I'm not much of a cook. But, I fried up some eggs. Do we get some hot wings?
That is
Boom.
Terrible.
I think we
seemed amazing.
I think we came to the conclusion last week that chicken and eggs are fine.
I had to get that protein boost, man. I've been lifting my kid up and down, working out. Yeah. I got to build that muscle.
It seems like cannibalistic almost in a weird way.
Oh, no. It seems morally.
Yeah.
There's a moral argument.
You're eating the whole family now.
Yeah. The whole chain, the whole cycle.
Yeah.
Do you guys know an egg is an unfertilized thing.
It's
a baby chicken.
Here's the thing. I don't bring my religion to you. You don't bring your religion
to
me.
That's right. I'm pretty sure Ted Cruz would care to differ.
All right. So those were our breakfasts. After our breakfast, we get to our breakfast in bed apologies. This is our opportunity to make right what we might have gotten wrong in any previous episode. Does anyone have anything they need to apologize for?
I need to apologize to my bookie.
Yes, John.
Because Pickle, if you're listening, you got to pay me tomorrow. Because we cash those over-unders, babies.
All them over-unders. Got it.
Kills it.
Cashed them.
I'm hoping you need to find Pickle because then you got to pay me. This is good.
And the Heat.
There's a chain reaction.
The Heat
too sweet me.
Too sweet won you a bunch of money. Heat won the Southeast.
You know, I checked it. Which was weird. I thought it was a plus 250. It was only plus 150, so it's not as much as I thought it was going to be.
Oh, that's not, that doesn't seem that great of odds.
Well, now I see, now that I look at it, I see what I did. I basically knew I was throwing away that Pistons bet.
Yeah, like
for
40 to 1 or 7 yeah. to 1. Or
and then something. I kind of hedged my bet with the Heat, but the Heat made it interesting.
They made it very interesting.
I thought the Heat was going to be a lock. I did not know that the Hawks were. I didn't think the Hawks would be as good as they were this year, honestly.
They turned out fine, but you really sweated the final night of the regular season. I know, right. John has this significant bet on the Heat to win, right. the Southeast, and the Heat were up by 26. The Hawks were down by 15.
It was not good.
And then in a drop of a hat, blink of an eye, it was totally reversed. And then the Hawks had gotten within one, and the Heat ended up losing the game.
Can you explain to me why the Hawks didn't want to win and why they rested players? Did they want to play the Celtics instead of the Hornets? I don't get it.
I don't know if there was any. I think some of it was from the Hawks' perspective. They didn't. Obviously, they couldn't control what happened in the Miami Celtics game.
Right.
So they just weren't going to worry about it. But then in the last, like, during this fourth quarter, while all these games are simultaneously going down, while, like, the Hornets are playing the Magic, all these things were dropping up in the air. And then it became clear, like, oh, the Heat don't need to retake. Like, they blew a 20-something point lead. But now, actually, if they lose, they end up third. Like, all these things, like, it was weird where... As it was going on,
well, I think Atlanta wanted to play Boston because they won three or four against them in the regular season. They, you know, won by 7 points.
And
a game,
I think
that has to be it. That has to be it,
right? And so I think Boston would have been happy to lose,
right?
To go ahead and throw the game to the Heat, and then that would have dropped them down to six.
Mm-hmm.
And Boston was like, "Yeah, let's play Miami. Like we've done great against Miami." Mm-hmm. And also, that's it.
You guys, you piece together.
Well,
the jigsaw.
And there's this really weird rule that will probably be changed because those teams ended in a four-way tie.
Right.
The 3-6 ended in a four-way tie. The Heat are the 3 seed, despite the fact that the Celtics swept them,
right.
and had the same record as them. Because in a four-way tie or in any tie over more than two teams, it reverts back to the division winner.
Right.
Even though the NBA has established that winning a division is meaningless. But turns out it's not.
I was about to ask... since you guys are fixing writing all my wrongs, I know Cubby don't hang banners.
Right.
But do teams not care about winning the division at all anymore? Do you think there's any bragging rights to
it
at all?
I think it depends on the team and the division. I think Miami does not.
But they like have the Celtics or something probably do.
I feel like if the Grizzlies won the Southwest division, oh yeah, we need to raise a banner.
Yeah.
We don't have any banners.
Nope.
And that's an impressive feat for this era because there's been a lot of really good Southwest teams. But I think most teams don't really care at all or have any need to raise that banner. My apology for this week is you mentioned it, John. You were apologizing to Pickle, mm-hmm. coming for your money. When we were scratching our own backs last week talking about how well we were doing on our unanimous over-unders, I made a mistake.
Oh, no.
I went back and listened to make sure I was right, and it turns out that Chuck did not pick the Orlando Magic to go under.
Oh.
We were not unanimous.
He was buying into that Elfrid Payton sensation.
So he got it right, which means our unanimous picks were actually 8-1, not 8-2.
Ooh. Oh.
So we were even better than that.
We have got to bet next year.
We've got to bet real money.
We
so
need to bet on the playoffs.
I'm a little scared to bet on the playoffs. Yeah. It gets tight.
I don't know anything about what's happening in this playoffs.
Last year I did pretty poorly, so
yeah.
This win total over under thing is the only thing we could possibly bet on.
Okay, so our final over under results, based on everything we did in our first two podcasts of this season, once again, I finished third.
Mm-hmm.
17-13 on the over-unders. This is exciting.
If Chuck beat me, I'm going to do a backflip.
Chuck went 19-11. And John, you won again. 21-9 on your over-unders. Following up last year's over-unders, where John went 21-9.
That's crazy.
John, I thought you're bad at gambling. Why aren't you
symmetry.
Making these bets? More.
I will, I must have been sober during those podcasts.
So
there was a while you weren't drinking beer.
Ah, yep. It was the gluten-free days, wasn't it?
Gluten-free days. Early season gluten-free.
The Glutard era.
So last year on our unanimous picks, we were 12-3. On our two-third picks,
right,
where two of the three of us went one way, we were 20-9 last year because Chuck, as it turned out, didn't actually pick one of the over-unders upon listening.
He's so good at talking on both sides of his mouth. Sneaky.
This year, 8-1 on the unanimous picks.
Hey, hey, hey.
And once again, we were 20-10 on our two-third picks. We have to start putting real money down.
Yeah, I don't think we have a choice. And, of course, we'll do this and fail.
We will do this. Yeah, yeah. We will do this and fail. All right, Chuck, what's your apology?
I'm sorry to the Golden State Warriors. Last week, I called you out. I feared that you were close to ruining the reigning heavens opening up with crying Jordan face. And you guys did it. And I apologize for it all doubting your excellence and your all-time greatness. Within minutes, there was a fantastic crying Jordan face placed on Flu Game Jordan with Scottie Pippen holding crying face Flu Game Jordan up, superimposed with Steph Curry looking super, super mischievous. And Steve Kerr peeking so gently over the shoulder with a smile. It was great. Photoshop is one of the greater things ever alive. And
I want to take crying Jordan to the next level and make like little films.
I may get it tattooed on my body. I mean, there's like a very good chance that that's
just the crying Jordan or crying. In
why not? You got
some humorous.
You got like a little baby with a Davy Crockett hat. You got a crawdad.
Uh-huh.
Crying Jordan will fit
it
the
would.
Motif.
I don't. A lot of the crying Jordans, like, I'm not a person who is offended, but like I don't care. They're fine. They're whatever. But the ones that always make me laugh are when you put a crying Jordan on a celestial body, like a planet or a sun, like a comet slamming, like the Denzel comet slamming into a world of a crying Jordan face superimposed, kills me. Like can't stop laughing every time I see it. Like I'll click on the Twitter and I'll
Keith's
expand
really into,
the image and then I start giggling.
Keith's really into astronomy humor.
I would
watch a here's the film challenge. You take the opening to Melancholia.
Oh Lord! Oh God!
Of the worlds colliding, and I need a crying Jordan face over those planets. Crying Jordan versus would it be Steph Curry or what about Riley Curry? A Riley Curry planet colliding over the Wagner,
and then like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes can pee on both of them. Melancholia is one of the first cases I ever had of bad movie chicken. You ever have this where you go to a movie with a buddy?
You won't make it through?
And like you both desperately want to leave, but you're both trying to be nice. So you sit through the whole movie.
I gotcha.
And then you get out, and me and my buddy Rusty were like, man, if I wasn't at the movie with you, I would have totally walked out. And he was like, oh yeah, I wanted to leave. You wanted to leave? Why didn't you say something?
That's funny. That's like whatever.
Although,
yeah.
Crucial nude scene in that movie.
A dunst?
Yeah, you can turn it off right after that.
Hey, the first 9 minutes...
pretty interesting.
Spectacular.
Great. And then it just...
Spoiler alert.
And all I need is a crying Jordan for the planets. Someone put a crying Jordan over...
You just made this movie so much better.
Over the planets, and that'll be perfect. Okay, those were our breakfast in bed apologies. Before we get to our steak and eggs best thing, I want to tell you guys about Fan Essentials. It is a subscription service that brings the best of NBA gear personalized to you, mailed to your house for whatever team you like. They have boxes starting at $14.99. Enter the code FBBF as in fast break breakfast, and we get a sweet taste of your order, and you get 30% off. So go to fanessentials.net.
Do it now.
Get all the essentials you need. All right, boys. Steak and eggs, best thing. What's the best thing you saw as the regular season wrapped up?
Oh, me?
Might as well, Chuck.
Kobe. That dude. Big game. Dude. Last game in Staples, last game of his career. Stepped to the plate and shot inefficiently and awfully for a while and then caught fire towards the end. And
only
made
took
everybody
him 50 shots, boys and
girls.
To
get 60 points. We are talking out of this, you know, really. We're nitpicking.
You're
but,
nitpicking out of the side of your mouth, but it was.
I love that phrase.
I am a Kobe hater. There's no question.
We haven't.
I've lived my life as a Kobe hater.
Same.
And the Kobe hate has evolved, and I felt grown into a justified place where maybe it didn't start at one. However, all Lakers fans, That game was amazing.
Out of that this
game,
world.
That game was the People vs. O.J. Simpson of basketball games.
It was.
It might have some flaws, but it was the most watchable thing ever and probably been my favorite moment of the year.
What was insane was obviously the star power. Like, they cut to Snoop Dogg. He was in the upper deck. He couldn't even get lower bowl seats for this game. It felt like.
I mean, it was.
Did you read the chat quote?
No. Oh, the candid chat quote? Yeah, give it to us.
It's pretty amazing. Get your cough button ready.
Yeah.
He said, I told Kobe to get 50. Motherfucker got 60.
It was a game at half. I mean, Kobe, the first half was just terrible. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of pregame, you know, everyone was saying, what's your over-under for shot attempts? In my mind, Kobe was going to go 7 for 25.
Right.
Like, honestly.
Right.
And that must be Keith Hader. That's Kobe Hader, me.
Well, that's someone and we have watched him be an iShop winner multiple times.
What's his award?
But then I saw all these people being like, oh, he's taking 30 shots. He's taking 30 shots easy. And then I saw one that was like, someone was like 28 and a half. He's like, you give me 38 and a half, I'll probably take the over. Mm-hmm. So then it grew. At halftime, he only had 20.
Right.
But then he was just chucking. And they rested him a little bit, you know, in the first half.
Yeah.
Second half, it was just hands off.
Light him up.
Just go get him. And he was chucking. And he finally caught fire. And the Jazz... The pitiful, pitiful Jazz. I mean, there was a lot of pressure and a lot of atmosphere energy in the arena. They kind of crumbled under it. But then Kobe hit his last five shots.
Yeah.
One for each championship.
Oh, no.
One more than Shaq.
That's not original.
That's in the montage at the end of the Kobe Bryant movie. That's what he was doing.
That Kobe Bryant movie.
Write your own ending.
He
was auditioning for a movie role. Like, that's what that was. That wasn't a game. That was an audition.
As much as we can put him down for all the numbers, the fun thing about that game is a couple things. One, in a way, it was the storybook ending. It was a storybook ending where he scored 60 points,
right?
Which is crazy.
He scores more points than anyone else in this season has scored.
It was his last game.
Holy God. Put time of cholera in the baby dungeon.
Allergies, John. A lot of allergies.
So funny.
That was like a tuberculosis cough, like a Doc Holliday Deadwood cough.
I think I'm going to be all right.
Do you need a rag that you can cough blood on for the rest of the
podcast? I'm going to wipe the blood off this pop filter. No, so it was the final. It was his final go where he scores 60 points. He has the freedom to shoot and do it every once, and everyone's deferring to him, but he actually brought them back, actually came, hit the win.
He nailed the dagger.
The atmosphere in the arena was crazy. It was everyone was so, it was a religious experience. It was the fervor of the
televangelist. It was like watching
the
Russell televangelist. Crowe in Gladiator. It was just like,
not entertained?
It was everything that people wanted, and he finally came through, and
you quit talking about the athletic performance and get to the post-game speech?
Well, but it also was all the Kobe haters were like, can't you see? This is ridiculous.
It really was.
It's bad. And then all the Kobe fans were like, can't you see?
Yeah.
This is amazing. And so it was the fun, like...
A true lesson in perspective.
Well, right. I mean, you know what he did. He brought in some, you know, the writers of Breaking Bad. And he's like, we need a series finale.
Right.
What are we going to do for this? And Vince Gilligan...
I can't wait till the documentary. We're going to see, like, the halftime where he only has 20 shot attempts. He's like, listen to, like, Cypress Hills. You ain't going out like that.
Bruh.
Like, punching teammates, lines.
Do you know how he got in? He came in a helicopter.
No, he didn't.
He comes to most practices in a helicopter, actually. I think that's a real thing.
Tell me he flies it himself. Well, that would be outstanding.
I don't know who put it out on Twitter, but they were saying that the metro station in L.A. has named one of their stops the Kobe Stop. So they named a metro stop off a guy who commutes in a helicopter. So
yeah,
but he's a hero. I mean, you saw the throngs of fans before the game out in that
Laker
outside
fans,
the Staples Center.
Laker fans were the worst.
It was just massive. I mean, it was amazing. And I'm telling you, I assumed while I was watching the Grizzlies get killed and the Warriors had number 73 wrapped up, I assumed I would go to bed. I was so sleepy, I could not turn off the Lakers game. It was riveting.
Chuck and I have a bunch of Laker fan friends, and you can audibly hear Chuck and I's eyes rolling back in our head when we watch a Lakers game with them, because Kobe will miss like 9 shots in a row, and then when he hits it, they'll just look at you and go, Kobe.
Yeah. I mean, it was a...
and you're just like, what are you talking about?
It was a totally meaningless game, and we've seen many guys go off in... Like, if it wasn't the Lakers, That's a hilarious end of the season game. Like, I mean, it's a Shabazz Muhammad dropping 37 against somebody. Like, it's a random thing. But the fact that it was Kobe, that it was scripted, felt scripted, it was a storybook ending, and it was some of the best NBA television you'll ever see.
Even the most vigilant Kobe haters had to enjoy. I didn't get to watch any basketball last night, and I had the choice of rewatching my favorite team, the Grizzlies, be at least in a historical moment against the Warriors, and I chose to watch the Kobe game instead.
You had to see it. Right. It was the most storybook feeling moment in the NBA in my mind since the Magic Johnson All-Star game where he hits the three pointers like at the end of the game. Like after he came out, he announced he had HIV, like him coming back, and that felt scripted and just surreal. Even though, again, it was a meaningless game, the fact that he pulled out 60, shot 50 shots, which is the most shots anyone has shot since the 60s. Like, the most shots anyone's taken in 50 years.
Sheboygan.
And it was, so it was fantastic. It was, so yes, even though we like to put down Kobe, who's, you know.
Oh, no, I'll miss him. I'll miss his
analytics.
His way with words. That's what I'll miss the most.
It'll be a few years.
Mamba out.
I really kind of understand. He was an era. He was an entire generation of dominance.
He was a sociopath who turned out to also be good at basketball.
He really was the heir to Jordan in more ways than one.
Yeah, in the realistic sense of just not caring about other people's humanity for the sake of victory.
Right.
And that, you know, we raise that up in America in all forms. We want it in our business leaders. We want them in our politicians. We want people to do whatever it takes to win. And then, we kind of poop on it with Kobe. Because he's kind of a jerk.
His win shares per 48, the same as Larry Nance.
Here we go.
Larry Nance was a better dunker.
Junior?
Larry Nance was an all-star.
I mean, oh, I thought you meant his player. Son.
No, not Larry Nance. No.
Yeah, senior, huh? The actual good. Larry Nance.
All right. My best thing is a very... So you went with the mainstream biggest story ever.
Mm-hmm.
When I was doing my deep dive researching the International Stackhouse of Pancakes Award winner... This week, I had like a moment that was very akin to in the movie Spotlight when they're going through those priest registries and they notice the code, mm-hmm. like the code for all of it, and there's like this, like, oh! So I'm filtering through all these numbers and a name keeps popping up. And I was like, what is this? Bojan Bogdanovic here? Wait. Bojan Bogdanovic here?
that little Croatian pervert.
Turns out, as far as I can tell, using Basketball Reference, Bojan Bogdanovic in a meaningless last week of the season did something that has never been done before. He shot under 18% in three straight games while with double-digit shot attempts.
Oh, wow.
So he went 2-for-12, 2-for-12, 2-for-15.
Those are rec league numbers.
Three straight games. And so I'm running this thing to be like, has anyone taken double-digit shot attempts and shot under 20%? For three straight games before. And I finally found a couple people. But yeah.
Is he the player coach? Why does he get to stay in?
If you lower it down to 18%.
Why did he stay in?
He's the only person in the last 35 years to go three consecutive games with double-digit shot attempts while shooting under 18%.
So is the iShop Award now perfunctory? Do we even have to do it this week?
Oh, no. There were. It is still hotly contested. this last week of the season, we won't have time for it on this show. Because of how much we have to talk about, but I definitely wanted to do a thing like, is this a real stat line from the last night of the NBA? There were some.
Our game of scones?
I mean, not just Kobe attempting 50 shots. There were some wild, like, you know, did you play James Ennis or Norman Powell in your fantasy final? Because, oh my goodness, type thing. So that was my best thing of the week. The
small I rode Seth failure. Curry to a fantasy title.
There you go.
Not Steph. Seth.
John, what is your steak and eggs best thing?
Pistons in.
Pistons made it.
Pistons made it, and I think it's a compelling matchup versus the Cavs and could be tougher than the Cavs would probably like to think. They don't defend the three well. Pistons can shoot threes. If the Pistons get hot, they can make that a series. I don't know who's going to guard Andre Drummond.
I think he's going to check himself out of the game like he always does because they're just going to foul him.
Yeah, they're going to hack a drum.
They're going to get
sure.
Sasha Khan in there and start hacking
Sasha
away.
Sasha Khan. I love Sasha Khan, by the way. I think they've already sent him back down to the Canton Charge?
Could be. I don't, yeah.
That is the Canton Charge.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting.
So I think Stan Van's like really quick turnaround of the Pistons franchises.
Oh yeah,
an amazing story.
Year two of the Stan Van is they seem to be on course.
Just bang in the playoffs, probably going to get better. I believe they have cap room too. So
I wonder if they might. If their progress might stall out with Drummond's free throw shooting and right. Jackson's efficiency, but so far it looks good.
Talk about putting your money where your mouth is too with the Reggie Jackson contract too.
Like, oh yeah,
Stanman said that, I think this guy's good enough to be, you know, and in the really deep guard universe we have, Reggie Jackson is good enough.
Oh, he's good enough, definitely.
Yeah.
All right. What's the opposite of that? What's your cream of wheat worst of week?
My worst thing?
Yes, sir, Chuck.
Kobe. So.
Mamba out.
No, I mean, this was the end, and it just felt a little like Gordon Hayward was jumping in the lane. They were going to give him 60 points. He was trying to get a lane violation and lose the game, you know? It didn't make sense to me. It felt like Brett Favre getting...
Can you explain this better?
Yeah, so Gordon Hayward, when Kobe was shooting his final free throw, was basically purposefully performing a lane violation. So he can get his 60 points. It didn't make sense. Plus, Kobe's last play was an assist, which is weird.
Yeah.
That's kind of like not even a cool...
That's going to get thrown in my face someday. last play. His final choice.
His final play with the clock running was an assist. I mean, he had the free throw.
He should have punted that ball into the stands and done the Degeneration X crotch chop.
He should have done the Sam Cassell. I mean,
big nuts dance.
Yeah, yeah.
Right at Shaq's face.
I will jump on your Kobe being the worst thing. Even with that 60-point performance, if people don't understand that what Steph Curry did on the same night was a much more impressive game.
Of course.
46 points and 10 threes in under 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
he came out after that 400 threes record with a vengeance.
I mean, it was...
Oh, my goodness.
It was like just a shootout. He wasn't even concerned at all.
My worst thing is, we talked about it last week, the end of the process, the race to mediocrity.
Yes.
So we were talking last week how it was terrible that Jerry Colangelo was hiring his son Brian. To make it even worse, once he installed Brian as the new regime commander, he stepped away.
Call that a Bobby Knight.
So Colangelo just pulled off this coup. Jerry Colangelo, that is, pulled off this coup, puts his son in charge, gets Hinkie out, and then walks away like, mission accomplished.
What a mockery. Shambolic.
I did it. And it comes out that the other NBA owners had complained, and they had made it a point that Colangelo had to restrict his USA basketball duties while he was, you know, president or whatever his title was with the Sixers, which makes sense because you can't have the guy who is in charge of picking who gets to play in the Olympics and working with all the best players in the NBA actually running a team, because that's like bypasses the tampering laws.
Right.
So it makes sense they had to get him out of there. It would be similar to letting like a college coach be the face of American basketball and have access to all the top talent upcoming, much like Coach K, which is why it's good they got him out of there. But so I feel bad for Sixers fans who've been through this 3-year misery. And then Hinkie is out, even though you can argue that Hinkie did some things poorly, but to replace it with Brian Colangelo, when maybe even the commissioner pushed for Jerry Colangelo to go there to turn things around, was a PR move.
Right.
And basketball reasons.
And then just to give it to the son, it makes me sad all over. Like, those people have suffered enough, and now they do have so many assets coming to them, so they can speed it up, but I don't know.
Last week, I was sad for Sam Hinkie. This week, I'm happy for him. That's an awful place. It doesn't seem like it's run with any efficiency, any sort of organization like that.
It clearly drove him insane.
With, you know, nepotism and sort of kind of collusion from above. It seems like he would have been doomed anyway, no matter what. So I'm praying for you, Hinkie. Hope you do well, bub.
My worst.
Yes, John.
Rockets made the playoffs.
Ugh.
My least favorite team to watch. I don't even know if the beauty of watching the Warriors play basketball can make that a must-watch series for me.
Well, James Harden just did break the Artis Gilmore-held turnover record. So you'll be able to...
How did Ernest Gilmore have so many damn turnovers playing at that spot? Was he leading fast breaks and junk? What is going on? But I just... it's miserable watching them play basketball. I do expect Harden to actually play defense now that it's playoff time, which will make it a little better because, like, James Harden, he'll turn your stomach watching him try to play D.
I think...
Not try to play D, actually.
The Kings play-by-play guy... said something to the effect of he doesn't guard his own shadow or something in the last game of the season. Well, he was like, Seth Curry won on Harden, and that's pretty much 1-on-0. Harden doesn't guard his own shadow or something.
Whoa.
Yeah. Threw some shade. You're worse than Rockets making it. I do think, however, the Rockets have the firepower to make it.
They'll steal a
perhaps
game.
An entertaining series.
Yeah.
And because
Dwight Howard in the playoffs is a different creature too.
Well, and they have such a collection of characters.
Right.
It makes for good TV. Your worst, the Rockets, was like my second place worst. The tangent to that is the Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
They were my worst maybe a couple episodes ago. So right. I didn't go back there. I am so disappointed in the Utah Jazz. Like they collapsed.
Yeah.
They had the chance to beat. They were playing the Clippers, who rested all their starters.
Yeah.
They lost to them. They played in the game to go pretty much against the Mavs. They lost at home, and then they dropped the meaningless Kobe game. It would have been more exciting if the Jazz were playing for the playoffs and ended up dropping that Kobe game. That'd be something. But the fact that last year we were so high on the Jazz, they played so well after the All-Star game. They were like such an amazing net rating. They were the best defense in the league. We had Gobert as our most improved Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, MVP. Like Gobert had enamored us. He'd captured our hearts. And then this follow-up, I feel like even though they never settled on the backcourt, them not making the playoffs, I thought it's a massive disappointment. And I know they're still trending upward. I feel like they didn't make that tiny step forward or just any step forward that we assumed they would.
Right.
We assumed they would get into the playoffs. And then when you had teams drop off, that we didn't think, like, the Pelicans were so terrible, mm-hmm. and the Suns were really bad.
How about the Pelicans giving up 144 to the Timberwolves last night?
Man, those Timberwolves.
Pelicans doing things.
What is that?
I can't wait to be super, super let down by the Timberwolves by All-Star break next year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Timberwolves
are going to be the...
They're talking Tibbs and maybe Jaeger next year coaching them.
Oh, definitely.
I think that would be great when they get that pick. And that's going to be an exciting team, but it's definitely one of those...
They do have a bit of fool's gold in them, though.
All right, so let's move to let's go through real quick what you guys think for the awards, for the end of season awards, in lieu of our scattered, smothered, covered thoughts. We're gonna just go through
these. Could be pretty scattered and smothered.
Oh, they will be. So I think we just start with who is your second place MVP?
I'm going with Russell Westbrook. I think the second best. I know he's not on one of the greater teams in the league, but I think his performances with all the triple doubles he's put out this season gives me, you know, I think in any other year he would be in a severe conversation for MVP.
Well, I think that's one of the fun things is there's a lot of guys who any other year you think are putting out legit MVP seasons. So you
think of Russell Westbrook as one of the most exciting players, but he's not even really in the conversation for me for MVP.
No, it's just from like a gee whiz watch the game kind of thing. I love triple doubles.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I think he's
statistically he's putting up numbers that we've pretty much never seen.
Right,
but I still think Durant is more valuable to that team than even he is.
But and then you get into the whole conversation. What
it's hard,
value?
It's hard to
is,
figure out.
Right.
To pick which one. Mm-hmm. That's pretty wild.
I'm going with Chris Paul.
Wow. Okay. So you guys are both trying to get a. I feel like you're trying to get a rise out of me.
Well, to me, it was either Kawhi Leonard or Chris Paul.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, I feel like Pop could easily produce a winning team around the likes of LaMarcus Aldridge and Tim Duncan, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas Chris Paul, I mean, he shows you how, are we doing a least valuable later? Well, I'm going to vote for Blake Griffin for a variety of reasons, and Chris Paul kind of shows you why he's not valuable. Because Chris Paul can just do something as simple as, you know, DeAndre Jordan's a really limited basketball player, and Chris Paul turns him into a deadly weapon. J.J. Redick is just a guy. Chris Paul turns him into a deadly weapon.
That's not quite. J.J. Redick is one of the elite shooters in the NBA.
Right, but there's probably a J.J. Redick on most teams in the NBA or half of them, you know. And there's a reason he's kind of been a vagabond.
Strenuously object, Your Honor.
he's a journeyman player.
He's no Josh Richardson. Turns
him, and there was talk of him making the All-Star team. And that happens because of Chris Paul.
He's a journeyman player in the same way that like Kyle Korver is a journeyman player.
Okay, we wouldn't even be talking about J.J. Redick right now if he was still like in Orlando. That's, putting up terrible numbers.
That's probably legit, but I think J.J. Redick is a guy who after years just kept getting better and better and better.
I agree with you to an extent, for sure. But I think Chris Paul, he's, you know, truly in the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird vein of makes everybody around him so much better, as opposed to just being a dominant force.
I think philosophically I agree with what you're saying, but the player that I would choose over Chris Paul in that situation is Kyle Lowry. Like Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like that cog that makes that whole Toronto thing work. I don't think
I totally agree.
You know, I think he brings up that team's that team's level.
That's probably true, but if we're doing MVP talk, Kyle Lowry's not sniffing top seven or eight.
He wouldn't be a mine either. But I see what you mean. Like he's very valuable to that team.
I think Chris Paul is a great suggestion. I have more trouble with Russell Westbrook, even though Russell Westbrook is doing things that are still
statistically phenomenal.
So for me, it comes down to two guys. It comes down to Kawhi or LeBron James.
Yeah.
I think what LeBron James has done, possibly coasting. I know you're not supposed to give him credit for coasting, possibly coasting the first half of the year, even though he had better numbers than last year, but he's turned it on.
Yeah. I can't do it because of the whole coach saboteur stuff.
Yeah, the coach saboteur, his weirdness, his awkwardness.
Like actively almost kind of tanking, you know? Like I can't do it. Like to me, that denotes there have been moments where he's been a negative.
He's a traitor.
You know what I mean? Well, we didn't even bring in Chuck's
ex Benedict, baby.
Well, that makes sense.
Ex Benny.
For me, like I think it's Kawhi because the Spurs are so unstoppable, right. and he's obviously the best. I think he's one of the best teams of players, not to tip that category.
Right.
And he's turned into an incredible scorer, an incredible shooter, great foul shooter. The fact that he's their leader, but I think I would give it to LeBron over the fact that LeBron just keeps carrying these teams. I know this is an incredibly talented Cleveland squad, and they do have a lot of drama around them, which, yes, is probably self-created by LeBron.
Right.
But the fact that he keeps carrying this team, and I assume he's going to carry them into the finals again, and I think if you put Kawhi in LeBron's place, I'll play that game.
Yeah.
I don't think this Cavs team is anything, and I think LeBron is a guy who, if you put almost anybody else in his place, it's going to be tough. I think maybe Durant could do it, but
I think a Durant, a Chris Paul, a LeBron James, I think those are the types of players we're talking about.
Yeah.
A Steph Curry. And then there's another tier of players you couldn't do that with. I think Kawhi belongs in that tier along with the Russell Westbrooks. And that's to Lowry's credit. Like he's getting to that point. He's not there yet, but he's in that point where he, because I don't think DeMar DeRozan is any great shakes, honestly, as a basketball player. I think he just fits in well with that team.
Yeah.
Right.
But he's carrying them as well.
And I will say, in LeBron's argument, since he unfollowed the Cavaliers on Twitter,
it's amazing.
He's averaging 28.5 points on 62% shooting, hitting 52% of his threes with 8.5 assists, 8 boards. I wouldn't begrudge anyone. You know, I think it's Kawhi Leonard. I think Chris Paul is also a worthy argument.
I think Kevin Durant's a conversation, too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Kevin Durant is he's so good in the fact that, like, I think most people still think of him as being, you know, top three, top two of best, whatever the word best means to you, of, like, best basketball players in the world. But he does, it seems like he sometimes takes a back seat to Russell Westbrook's exuberance.
Right, right.
And then being on the same team is the whole, you know.
Well, he's just not as flashy, but I think he's been the more important player for the Thunder's run. And Chuck said he didn't think they were one of the elite teams, but I kind of think they've rounded into one.
Yeah, they've been real good. I'm very curious to see what they're going to do. All right, let's go to the, since I kind of tipped my hand, the Defensive Player of the Year award. For me, it's Kawhi Leonard. I think it's a two-horse race. I think it's interesting. There's a couple more you can introduce. I think it's a two-horse between Draymond and Kawhi. I take Kawhi because on this award, I always tend to favor a perimeter defender. Like when I think of like who can shut down this guy, who can shut down LeBron James, who can shut down, you know, or who can guard a guard or guard one of the top scorers, not just a big man. And so for me, that's why I go Kawhi, the hands of steel and his versatility.
Kawhi's obviously up there, Draymond. I think one of the dark horse guys is DeAndre Jordan. He's
He's gotten better.
He's gotten better, and you know he looks good around the rim when he doesn't. He affects a lot of shots, and every time
that's
I watch him,
the thing. He is a presence. He's a presence down low where he blocks so many shots on help defense, and again, being a tremendous defensive rebounder, where you grab everything, where people can't get a rebound.
I think DeAndre Jordan has turned into the biggest all-star snub over the course of the second half.
But this is the real MVP or defensive player of the year. It's Hassan Whiteside.
I see. Well, I was looking for that homer vote.
So
I don't care how many blocks he has.
He leads the league in blocks by a severe margin with a lot of really good shot blockers. I think that guy affects
play at the rim. They play better defense when he's not on the floor.
That's not true, John. That's not true. That stat of the numbers saying they had a better rating when he was off the court. It's like it's leveled out.
It has,
but I mean, it's not true.
That's the narrative, though. That I think you could stick to because he also. I mean, there's a lot of problems in Whiteside's game. Like he hasn't figured out pick and rolls.
He's top five, and that's the dangerous part. He's top five in defensive win shares. He's fourth in rebounds.
Here's a stat, irrefutable. When he gets posted up, they score 51% of the time. That's what happens when he gets posted up. Well, defense.
Well,
but he is a swatter.
He gets triple doubles with blocks, fam. Triple doubles with blocks.
He has set, obviously, the best block shot numbers we've seen in like 15-something years.
Yeah.
He has the best defensive rating in the NBA by a good stretch.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know. I mean, I know there's some, there's nits to be picked about his one-on-one
statistical
defense
giant
and his, you know, his,
but watch a big, like a guy like Paul Millsap play defense and then watch a guy like Hassan Whiteside play defense.
I think Paul Millsap
twirls apart. I got him as third or fourth best defensive player.
So who do you have, John? Who's your defensive player of the year?
Oh, Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard, yeah.
It's not really close.
I mean, for me, there's a handful of guys in the conversation. I like Kawhi. I like Draymond Green. I think Paul Millsap. I think DeAndre Jordan and Hassan Whiteside. I think those five people we mentioned, those are all the ones where I'm like, yeah, those
I can't
do, things.
Do Hassan just because I don't think he understands how to play defense. Now, I know the numbers are in his favor.
He's accidentally doing a lot of awesome things.
Right. I know the numbers are in his favor, but to me, like, I still like... If there's three players in this league that like I think can take over a game with their defense, it's Draymond, Kawhi, and Tony Allen.
Tony Allen is the one of the guys who can still.
And I think the guy Chuck mentioned. I think DeAndre Jordan is getting there because DeAndre Jordan is getting smarter. Mm-hmm. He's a learning computer.
Right.
It's like when the Velociraptors learned how to open the door.
Yeah. Oh, look out!
Because he's already scary as hell.
Right.
And now if he's actually figuring out how to play D, like Andrew Bogut should retire and just become his like defensive coach and teach him how to play D, you know, because if he like figures out the angles on the court combined with his freakish size and athleticism, I mean, and Whiteside could too if Whiteside keeps getting better, although Whiteside is kind of shockingly old.
Right, right, right.
But I think Kawhi, I mean, we're all kind of in the same wheelhouse.
Right, right, right. All right, so moving on. Here's the one I don't like. The sixth man award winner.
Mm.
What are your guys' thoughts on who is sixth man of the year? Who should be sixth man of the year?
A couple. I think you can go with Iguodala.
Right.
He's somebody who can, as far as his role, I know he doesn't score a lot of points off the bench. I mean, if you go by the numbers and the guys who didn't play a lot of, you know, who didn't start a bunch of games but played good minutes, Ryan Anderson, Drew Holiday.
See those?
These guys,
I can't get over those guys. Those guys,
I mean, they score a lot of points. I mean, on awful team.
Ryan Anderson again scored a ton of points. Is so atrocious at defense, and his team is so bad.
Yeah, I don't know.
You think you go Iggy?
I probably would go Iggy. I think he's the guy only because I think you could make an argument that like the Warriors could get every single award short of Rookie of the Year, Most Improved Player. You know, and have like the coach of the year, defensive player.
I mean,
of the year,
I'll
MVP.
I'll give Kevin Looney rookie of the year just for that practice squad contributions.
I don't think Iguodala fulfills what that award is about. Like he's an aging ex superstar on team, like a Bill Walton type or something.
So what do you consider the award to be about?
Sixth man of the year to me is the player off your bench who ignites your team the most. So to me, like, I look at guys like, and you may laugh at me, but I think they fulfill this role very well. Like Enos Kanter and Jeremy Lin are like my two guys that I would go to bat for.
Okay.
And Will Barton too, I guess. Like guys who, but Will Barton to me seems more like a starter now.
Okay.
Like I don't even think of him as a sixth man. Like
Tristan Thompson.
Like guys who come in and really change the game who aren't in the starting lineup, you know, and who aren't Iguodala, like, and also, you know, Iggy, I mean, between missing games and just resting a lot, like I don't feel like he's as impactful as these other guys.
Yeah.
So I agree completely. My opinion is, I want you to pick one. Well, I'll come back to you, John.
Okay.
But my opinion is, and this is not written down anywhere where this, you know, NBA voters are supposed to do this. My opinion is the sixth man of the year is similar to what you said, John.
Right.
This is a person not good enough.
Iguodala's too good to win this award.
This is not someone.
I'm not making any sense.
This is not an all-star player who a coach has decided to put on the bench, which is what Iguodala is. And like,
right.
And even like Ryan, like why is Ryan, even though Ryan Anderson has become a sixth man,
right?
A couple of years ago, like
he was a legit starter. Good.
Like, so, watch, Iguodala will probably start a lot in the playoffs. Like.
Yeah, yeah. So what you mentioned, John, like I like Will Barton. See, I don't think Will Barton is, I talked bad about him a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I don't think he's good.
Right.
But he's a sixth man.
Perfect sixth man.
Yeah, like he comes in firing. He does just enough good stuff, and he scores some points, so I like it.
I guess the reason I didn't pick Will Barton, I think I would pick Enos Kanter.
So Enos Kanter.
And here's why. Not only has he been great as a sixth man, he's given them that James Harden guy again, that third scoring option that kills teams. Like, they are exhausted from, you know, putting up with Westbrook's 32 points and Durant's 27 points. And then when you have Enos Kanter pop in at 18 to 25 points a night.
Oh, yeah, he's crushing
it. It's like, and I know he can't play defense. I also don't give a damn about defense on the Sixth Man of the Year award. I don't. Right.
So I had a lot of guys I was thinking about. I liked Ed Davis. Like, Ed Davis had a great year for Portland.
Huge.
Sneaky Ed.
And again, he only plays 20 minutes, but
he wouldn't even be in this conversation if like two guys don't get hurt.
Right. Mm-hmm. I thought Dennis Schroeder, who's a limited point guard.
Dennis Schroeder's terrible.
But he does he's a backup.
He's terrible.
Who comes in and does good stuff.
What's weird is that Hawks don't see him as a backup either, obviously.
Right. Well, they play him a lot.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like a Bismack Biyombo. Who, again,
if he play more minutes,
he's a backup.
If he play more minutes, like he's only playing about 18 minutes a game. If he play more minutes, I think Bismack Biyombo would be a very compelling character.
However,
even though it goes against what I just said about defense, because that's his real presence.
Did Evan Turner start a lot of games?
Evan Turner is in the conversation.
Yeah,
because
I watched him yesterday against the Heat. He brings a little bit of that stupid
punch.
Yeah, punch to you.
And you can play him all over the floor, uh-huh. Which another cool thing with Sixth Man.
He was kind of a punching bag among the NBA intelligentsia in the last couple of years, but he's played great this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was
Brad Stevens.
Brad, yeah, he even
Brad
Stevens, man,
did it to
if
him.
If you can make Evan Turner good, what can't you do?
But I will say, I think my final sixth man comes down to similar to you, John. Actually,
right.
I'm going to go with Jeremy Lin.
I think it's a very good pick
because for me, Jeremy Lin is a guy who like. He plays great. Every time he comes in for the Hornets.
How many times did you read the headline, Hornets win, Jeremy Lin scored 26 points?
Right, right. And again, my view of a sixth man is a team where that fan base is watching their starters play.
Right.
And then when this guy comes in, they're like, yes. Like,
yeah.
Like Jeremy Lin is coming in to pick us up a little bit.
You know a sixth man when you see him. It's like obscenity.
Yeah.
You know when you see it. And when I see Will Barton, I don't really see sixth man. When I see Iguodala, I definitely don't see sixth man. I see Jeremy Lin, I go, no, look at that sixth man. Vinny Microwave Johnson.
I will disagree with you there. I think if I had a vote, I'd go Barton third, Kanter second, and Jeremy Lin first. Although, still, shout out, he was an all-star. Right. Manu Ginobili, I don't know how many games he's played.
Awesome.
For me, he's now a sixth man. He gets hurt, but like when he plays, he's awesome.
Has he won it before?
I would say yes.
I think he has.
But
if Jamal Crawford ever didn't win it, maybe he won one.
Jamal Crawford wins them all. Yeah. All right. Coach of the year.
All right. This is going to get heated.
This is going to get heated. Who is your coach of the year?
Terry Stotts.
Terry Stotts. And I don't...
In a walk.
And if you want to give your... if you want to give your second and third, I've thought
second
about
these. Second is Steve Clifford. Third is Luke Walton.
Nice. Luke Walton.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out. I'll go ahead and go, Chuck. My coach of the year... I'm going to go This is tough. There's so many coaches who I feel are very deserving this year.
Right.
I'm going to go Greg Popovich, which is like,
you can do that every year.
You can do it every year.
I just can't do it.
This is the best. This is arguably the best Spurs team we've ever seen.
Arguably.
And like they've won however many they went 68. I don't even know. So I have Popovich first. I would give a half vote. Kerr, Walton. I'd split it. I think those guys incredible. This
probably can't do that.
Record breaking. Third, I go Rick Carlisle. Mavs got in with a bunch of hurt, aging ex-stars. Blows me away. And then I've been talking Steve Clifford all year.
The reason to me Stotts and Clifford are kind of a head above is just the expectations that they not only met but just decimated.
I picked the Hornets to win 25 games. So that's why Clifford was ahead all year. And it's only taken like the last couple weeks of the season where I'm like, you know what?
The Blazers.
This Carlisle-Popovich thing.
Blazers lost like 60% of their offense.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know who if we were going to pick a coach of the year based on how well a coach handled an awful thing, I'm going with Dave Yeager.
Oh, Yeager can be discussed.
Obviously they ended the season awfully, but zero to do with Yeager. He managed to squeeze some incredible performances out of dust and getting triple doubles from Matt Barnes and Zebo late in their career, their first triple doubles. He managed to make something out of nothing, and it was an impressive. I know you guys aren't huge fans of Yeager in general.
Yeah, I actually think this probably has little to do with it. He has little to do with it, but you have to talk about him.
He's just an incredible. He salvaged a show.
Chuck, you have drunk the Silky Sullivan's Kool-Aid. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
No, but I mean, he managed.
People are talking about him. It's happening.
He's plugging the holes in the Titanic. It's an awful thing. He was handed something that turned into a nightmare.
He's gone back to go team. People in Memphis are talking about Dave Yeager as coach of the year. The Grizzlies
are trying. Where
do we start?
I don't think he'll be the coach next year.
I'll start at the beginning, Chuck. This team greatly underachieved for the whole year to the point where everyone's like, what's wrong with the Grizzlies?
Right.
Was not incorporating any of the young guys into the roster. He was saying his team looked too old and too slow. He was benching Zebo and Tony Allen for Jeff Green. Okay, so then Mark gets hurt. Okay. So then they do.
All right, I'm off of so it. Then, forget so, it.
No, no.
Drop it. Drop it, bro.
Chuck,
you're right.
I'm going to need you to shut up.
Trying to think outside the box. Forgive me.
Let Keith go.
So then they get hurt. They pull off a couple miracle wins. Then Chalmers goes down, and the season is over. And everyone's like, oh, we got to pick up all these D-League guys. We got the Xavier Mumfords of the world. What are they going to do? The Grizzlies then, finishing the year, win three of their final 17 games. Everyone is throwing a parade for Dave Yeager for plugging the holes, for having his team a veteran-laden team. He's starting guys who, like, an average starting lineup of 36 years old.
Yeah, and that's his fault.
They go 3-14. The Pelicans finished the year 6-11 over their final 17 games with a worse team.
This is the greatest rant that's ever happened.
With a much worse team.
All right.
The Sixers also carried a D-League roster the whole year. They won 10 games. I mean, why not Brett Brown? Why not Brett Brown?
All right,
shut it down. Let's go.
You got it. I shouldn't have even done it.
Let's move to the next subject. I can't talk about this anymore. Scorched earth.
I am happy that Dave Yeager is the Grizzlies coach.
I was trying to build some sort of relationship.
If it wasn't for Mark Gasol's broken foot, we wouldn't even know that Jarrell Martin is an okay draft pick.
Or Jermichael Green
would never play. Jermichael Green would have never gotten his International Stackhouse of Pancakes Award.
That's true.
If it was for that monster.
Where would we be?
Jam. To be continued shortly.